Thanks, Mom.
With great pleasure, may I present to you our main speaker, Mickey B.
I'm Mickey, and I'm an alcoholic. Probably an addict. I like the daughter. I want what you got. I like to have the big book with me, too. I like to have this beautiful book, this big book, blue book, you know, with me. I'm real happy to be here. I'm real happy to be invited down here and to share. And, you know, I don't know that I'm nervous. I'm just beginning to feel myself right now, but I don't know about. And all I'm going to do really is tell you back what you told me in the first place. So that's kind of where it is. I'm a young at heart kind of guy. Is any other young at heart kind of guys here? This is Mickey's monkey. I got Mickey's monkey with me. I like to have a kind of a humorous shirt. Didn't want to wear a tie. Alcohol didn't do this to me, by the way. This is the way I speak. Can't blame alcohol for doing this. I don't know how they're going to do the accent bit, but, you know, we can get around that, I'm sure. I've seen a lot of people here that I know and that thank me for being here, and some people have even said they came here and heard that I was going to be here, and I just love that. You know, when I was out there drinking and using, there was just nobody breathlessly waiting for me to show up. Nobody at all. You know, when I got here, you know, on May 8th, it'll be 7 years clean and sober. And when I got here, one of the things I was not, I was definitely no vision for you. You know, you can believe that. You know, I just wasn't glued together very well. You know, and I didn't know that. I actually got here in the January of 83. But it took me 4 or 5 months along the road to decide that May 8th was my birthday. Try and get into that if I can remember, which takes me up to the point. I gotta get off the hook here, and I gotta ask God to put the words in my mouth He wants me to say, and give you the ability to hear what He wants you to hear. You know, and having said that, I guess what I say will be what He wants me to say, because if it ain't, something else will come out, right? Anyway. Some of you may have heard me speak before, and this is different, and I'll tell you for why. I have made a big attempt this last month or so to eliminate the cuss words and the swearing from my pitch, you know, because I got a foul mouth. I got this big, bad mouth, you know. And over a long period of time, you guys have told me that, you know, some of you like what I say and the way I say and that, but over quite a long period of time, you know, different people have told me that they've been offended by different things, and especially bad language and cussing and swearing. You know, and it's kind of reached a point where, you know, I've said that that's important to me now, and I don't want to do that anymore. You know, but I want to tell you that I'm okay with swearing. I don't mind swearing. You know, I can hide behind swearing. I use vocabulary. I use, you know, cuss words to hide behind and to give you shockability and all that kind of stuff. And I don't mind swearing. I don't have a problem with that. But I do have a problem with offending you. And I do have a problem with, you know, you as my family and my people. And I don't want to offend you. And I do care about you. And I do care about what you think, you know. And it's my ego. When I say things like, if you don't like me, that's your problem. I know that that's ego. That's just my ego. I know people who don't like me, and it's absolutely no problem to them not liking me. You know? So for me to say it's a problem if you don't like me, you know, it's just my ego. Incidentally, has anybody ever seen the word Diego? San Diego? If you look at Diego like I do, it actually says Diego. Diego. I screw around with these words, you know. I just love that. So like, I've always grown up and always wanted a pat on the back for not doing something that I shouldn't have been doing in the first place. You know. So I'm not saying that to get a pat on the back for not swearing and cussing. That's not the purpose of that at all. You know, but I do care. You know, and I do want to try and eliminate that. Now, I know I'm not perfect either, but Alcoholics Anonymous has taught me to turn things around, you know, and, you know, playing with words, I can say things like, Fothermucker now, you know, it kind of sounds different, you know, I don't know, it's maybe acceptable, it may not, it's a progress, I know that, but anyway, you know, I'm real glad to be here, and I'm just—I've been like looking forward to this. This is the first convention I've ever spoke at and stuff. You know, you talk about ego. I did one other convention. It was an ACA convention, and I spoke at the ACA thing. It was an all-purpose convention. Take that back, and I was the ACA speaker, and the tape machine didn't work, so that my tape came out blank. You want to see ego? You know. Anyway, talking about tape, I want to say hello to my mum, because I'm going to send her a copy of this tape. Hello, Mum, I love you. And you know. What are you laughing at? You know, I love my mum. My mum's back in London, England. You know, and she loves me. You know, and I don't know that that's always been true. Anyway, you know, I'm going to send her a copy of this tape, and I love her. And she's a perfect example, and she was just a perfect example of this, of why it's worth doing the work here, and why I believe it. This time last year, my dad died. Now, we were never joined at the hip, and lots of water went under that bridge, but, you know, he died. And weird stuff happens to me. Does weird stuff happen to you? Anybody here that weird stuff happens to? You know? You know, my dad died, my sister called me up and told me about it, so I, like, called my sponsor, right? Validate that and talk about that, just so that I'm not hiding it or stuffing it or not validating that. So I call him, so, you know, we talk about that. So then, like, that afternoon I come home, and on my machine there's a message from my sponsor, and he says, call me. I call him. He said, guess what? I what? He said, my dad died today too. Now that's weird, don't you think? My dad died, his dad died, same day. So he said, I've got to go back to Boston, be with the family. He said, and I'll give you some numbers to call should you need me. I said, great. Gave me the numbers we talked about. His dad died. That was fine. Put down the phone. And it's dawned on me, exactly the same thing. What you guys have always done, and you've shown me by your example. His dad died, so he was going back to Boston, where he's from, where his family were, to be with his family. Now, I'm from London, England. That thought had never even occurred to me. It had never occurred to me to go back to England. And as soon as I saw that example, I made the necessary arrangements, or I proceeded to set the wheels in motion, and they just fell right into place. I couldn't have actually planned that trip any better. You know. And it was perfect. It was so rewarding. I went to the man's funeral. I went to the Requiem Mass in that Catholic church that I wasn't very happy about, but even that was a whole other ball game. And, you know, just before my dad was, like, buried and stuff, my mother, who's been separated from my dad for 30 years, she's been married twice since, right, and separated from them, incidentally, too. She's 74 years of age, the epitome of, like, a socially acceptable, lovely old lady, salt of the earth, raised her kids, goes down the bingo hall, and she's 74, and, you know, does what she does, you know, and to all intents and purposes, she is this lovely old lady. She wanted to go and see my dad laying in the coffin. She asked me if I'd take her. I said, sure. So I took her. And it's not a funny story, but we were looking at my dad in the coffin. Now, I've done a lot of work in that area. You guys have taught me how to do that and do some completion work. And I was looking at my dad, and she was looking at him. And she looked down at him like that, and she went, you bastard. Now, Why it's worth doing the work is because I don't want to be 74 years of age carrying around all that grief, carrying all that stuff inside. 74, the best I can do is look in a dead man in a coffin and say, you bastard. I don't want to do that. I want to do what it takes. I don't want to do what you guys taught me. I want to continue to grow in Alcoholics Anonymous. And so one day, I want to be, my only ambition in life is to be one of those old farts that have been around here for years and years and years and years. You know, I want to become an old fart in AA, you know, that's what I want to be. I want to be like one of those bloody dinosaurs, you know. I don't even care if I'm a bleeding deacon, just as long as I'm here. You know, that's just the way it is. You know, and I want to be happy, joyous and free. And I want to be like this book talks about, you know, on page 16 and on page 132. It says, there is a vast amount of fun about it all. A vast amount of fun about it all. And on 132, right in the middle, it says, we absolutely insist on enjoying our lives. Anybody out there have a problem with that? See, I don't know about you, but I want to enjoy my life. And it wasn't like that when I got here, you know. It just wasn't like that. And as a result of this program and this beautiful book here, you know, and these steps, you know, my life has changed. It's changed a hell of a lot. I am nothing like that guy that came in here. Just nothing like it. I am a true example of the butterfly. The butterfly that came from the cocoon, or the chrysalis as we call it. You know, when you look at, if you look at one of those cocoons, those little chrysalises, and someone said, hey man, look at that. You know what that is? No, what's that? That's this beautiful multicoloured thing that's going to flit and flutter around. It's called a butterfly. Yeah? What are you on, pal? You know, see, there's nothing about it to indicate that it's going to become a butterfly. And that's what I was when I got here. There was nothing about me to indicate what I couldn't come. And nothing about us when we get here. You know, I'm immensely proud and honoured to be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I hear different things in these rooms. You know, I have trouble drinking cold water, you know. I keep wanting to bless it and turn it into wine. You know. You know, the other guy did. Anyway, you know, I hear people say in Alcoholics Anonymous that they earned their seat. My granddaddy sponsor taught me different than that. You know, I never earned my seat in Alcoholics Anonymous. I never earned nothing. I never worked for a start. You know, it was a freely given gift. It was a God-given gift. You know, I never earned the right to be here. You know, I never done a damn thing honourable in my life. Nothing. I never done anything honourable enough in my entire life to warrant the privilege and the honour of sitting in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm immensely proud and privileged to be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I've never done anything in my entire life that compares to staying clean and sober almost 7 years. Nothing at all. Nothing at all even comes like this much in comparison to it. And I never done a damn thing honourable enough to earn that. I never earned my seat here. It was God-given, man. It was a freely given gift. The very word gift, G-I-F-T, God is forever there. And that's what it's been. And he gave me the help I needed. Help. I never knew that I needed help. I never couldn't ask for help. The very word help, his ever-loving presence. I never knew that. I never knew that. I never had a God-given gift. I never knew how to ask for help. I never knew I had to. Didn't know anything about that. You know, never had a God. A God of my understanding. I never had a God of my understanding. Every understanding I had of God was like somebody else's indoctrination into me. Not mine. You know, the God that I came in here with, it was really kind of like nothing like this beautiful book mentions. Nothing like this book that I love so much talks about. The God of my understanding was a fearful, you know, threatening, punishing God. A God that was like out for me, you know. You know, that was the God that I knew. I know, and I haven't come here to insult anybody today, but I know that there's some other recovering Catholics out there. And, you know, the God of my understanding was like that threatening God. The fear of God had been installed into me, man. You know, that God. And when I got here and they said things like, turn it over to God. What? Let go and let God. What? Pray to God. What? Pray to God. Pray to God? Pray to God? I wasn't going to pray to that sucker. Oh, no way, man. If I'd prayed to him, he'd have known where I was. There you are. I've been looking at you, you know. Like, pray to God? No way. I wasn't praying to no God. That God, I couldn't do nothing, man. They threatened me with God on everything I'd done. I couldn't even play with my dick, man. I couldn't. They said, don't touch that, you'll go blind. I took no notice. I did it. When I found out how good it was, I thought, well, I'll risk one eye. I'm telling you. See, for that God, man, was it? I had no loving God. No, that was completely out the window, man. Nothing was happening to me. Nothing like this book, this beautiful book that we got to learn from. No, nothing like that at all. You know, that beautiful book that I love so much. That got the steps in there. Got the steps in the program. Steps, S-E-S-T-E-P. You know, solution to every problem. And that's what I found. I don't know about you, but every problem that I've ever come across, all I've had to do is like refer to the steps and the people to tell me about them. I got a guy, he's not my sponsor, but he hits me with a step. Everything I talk to him, I pick up the phone and I, and he goes, 8 step, click. Well, that ain't very nice. Yeah. I'll do it again. 3rd step, click. He just hits me with a step. And that's what it is, and it's solution to every problem. That's what the program's been. And that's what the steps are. There's a solution. I don't know whether you've got any problems that the solution, you know, isn't in the steps. I may have, but I haven't come across it yet. I know when I'm going nuts, when I'm nuts and I'm crazy and I'm just a lunatic, N-U-T-S, I'm nuts, man. What does N-U-T-S mean? Not using the steps. That's what it means. I'm nuts! I don't know about you, but that's what's gone on. You know, I have all this stuff go on. I have all this crazy stuff go on all the time. You know, I wasn't glued together very well. I never knew I had a problem. I never even heard. You know, we talk in that book about, you know, selective hearing and stuff. I never even heard when I got here that it was a no-no to do other stuff other than alcohol. I never heard that. Did you? I never heard that. Alcoholics Anonymous. Alcohol, alcohol, Alcoholics Anonymous. Right, alcohol, alcoholics or alcoholics. I never heard that it was a no-no to do other mind-altering chemicals. I never heard that. I heard it was advisable not to. Totally different thing. And I never took advice in my life. So consequently, it didn't include nothing else. I came to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous and embraced this program. Never drank again. Never drank again. I'm a blackout drinker and user, by the way. Is there any other blackout drinkers and users here? See, I never knew what a blackout was. No idea what a blackout was. I had no idea what a blackout was, and I've been having them all my life. Never knew what a blackout was. Never knew I had a problem with alcohol. Never knew I had a problem with drugs. I found out about my drug problem in Alcoholics Anonymous. See? Did anybody ever hear the term drug of choice when they were out there? I never once heard the term drug of choice until I got here. I swear to God. Nobody, not once, ever came up to me when I was out there drinking and using and said, hey, dude, what's your drug of choice? It just never happened. It wasn't part of what happened. And I never ever said anything. I cannot imagine being backstage at a Rolling Stones concert and someone saying, hey, mate, want to come do some of this good dope? And me saying, certainly not. My drug of choice is Jack Daniels. It never happened. Just never happened. Yeah. I'd never ever considered it. Drug of choice? My drug of choice, if there was one, was yours. I know I suffer from a disease called alcoholism. I don't have a problem with that, but that ain't what I call it. I call my disease more. That's what I call my disease, more. I don't even know what I'm going to say up here, but I know I'm going to want more time to say it in. I want more of everything, more. Doesn't matter what it is, doesn't matter who's got it or where it comes from, I don't care, I just want more of it. And that's usually followed by, is it good and will you front me some? That's the truth. You know, that's just the truth. I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. I never knew there was a process. I didn't know, like this beautiful book talks about, this wonderful book here, talks about this process that takes time to work. You know, I never knew nothing about that. Never knew I had a drinking problem. Everybody I knew drank. I never knew anybody that didn't drink. In London, England, in the pubs, everybody drinks. You never ever not drank. You never went, I never knew anybody that didn't drink. And everybody, as far as I knew, drank like me. Suffice to say, if I never had skin, I'd have just formed a puddle. You know, that's how much I drank. I didn't know any different. No one I knew didn't drink. If I knew anyone who didn't drink, I mean, they were weird. They did weird stuff. Like talk to police or something. You know, I mean, you didn't trust them. I mean, I grew up outside the law and loved it. I was a thief and loved it. Everybody I knew was a thief and outside the law. Perjury to me was as natural as breathing. Everybody I knew told lies, especially in court. You know? So did the police. Everybody. You know? Never ever told the truth. Liar, cheat and a thief. Yeah. You know, that's why when I got here and I never knew I had an alcohol problem or nothing like that. I just never knew that. You know, when I got here as a result of that blackout, I didn't know that was a part of the process. I didn't know that this process was working, and somehow I'd got sick enough to get here and crossed over that invisible line, and sometime, you know, I got to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and somebody... I told a man a story. It's a disease of denial, right? I told a man a story. He said, you was in a blackout. I said, what? He said, yeah, we call that a blackout. What do you think came out of this rigorously honest mouth of mine? No, I wasn't. I weren't in no blackout. Didn't know what it was, but denied it anyway. You know, just in case. I mean, like, that was it. You know, he said, yeah, we call that a blackout. I said, no. I was awake, man. I was awake. I was moving around doing stuff. I said, blackout, idiot, not pass out. Oh, I didn't. See, to me, a blackout or anything like that was like you threw a wobbly somewhere and passed out. That was what you did. I didn't know you did stuff in blackouts that you didn't remember or have control over, like travel. Anybody like travel in blackouts? I did. I came out of a blackout once walking down a street in Spain. Now, I'd lived in Spain I knew Spain. I went, oh, hi, Spain. I mean, he never done anything. I went straight into a bar and carried on drinking. I mean, I never knew how I'd got there or how long I'd been there or what I was doing there. It didn't make any difference. Never did. You know, never knew what a blackout was. All the time, blackouts over and over and over and over again. Blacking out all the time. Big ones, small ones, up ones, down ones, fat ones, thin ones, I mean long ones, short ones. Blackouts, I'd forget phone calls or, you know, be disappeared for 3. We just had St. Patrick's Day. Reminded me of another blackout. I lived in Long Island the first year I got here. I went into the city of Manhattan for St. Patrick's Day. When I got back to Long Island, they said, where you been? I said, where do you think I've been? I went to St. Patrick's Day parade, Manhattan. They said, it was 3 days ago. I never knew. Didn't matter. Blacked out everywhere, anytime. I've been to Buckingham Palace twice. Puked on the Queen's lawn, man. Blacked out. We talk about high bottoms and low bottoms. His disease didn't know I was at Buckingham Palace. Didn't care even less. You know? Blacked out there too. You know? Everywhere. You know what? I never knew how much to drink to go into a blackout. Never had any control over like what it took to go into a blackout. I mean, I never knew how much to drink to go into a blackout for X amount of time. You know? I never knew how little. I mean, I never knew what it would take to go into a blackout. Chances are, if I did, I would have done. See, I can probably think of nothing better around about Wednesday as a 3-day blackout see me up to the weekend. You know, I mean, if I had known how much to do it, but it never. I never did. I don't know about you, but some days I'd have a beer and feel a bit woozy. Another day I'd drink a fifth and not seem to even bother me. So I never had any control over alcohol. Just never knew anything about it. See, so now I'm blacking out all over the place. Do you know what? Blackouts never ever happened conveniently, did they? You know what I'm saying? It never ever happened conveniently. A nice little blackout, convenient. It just never worked that way. And I never once came out of a blackout. Not once did I ever come out of a blackout doing something nice for somebody. I just never once came out of a blackout like giving a kid a toy. You know, or heading up a charity show, or doing something like, oh, blacked out again, oh, no. Never once, not once. It was always like this book, this beautiful book talks about, pitiful and incomprehensibly demoralized. Every single time, pitiful and incomprehensibly demoralized, P-A-I-D, paid, we paid our dues, don't have to do that no more. But it never ever happened conveniently. And I don't know about you, you come out of a blackout and you just don't remember everything. And yet you know it ain't right. And that old Rolodex is going off in your head. And you don't think, God, what happened? Where did I? What was I doing? You know. And I never knew that. I never knew nothing about that. And I got to Alcoholics Anonymous as another 2-day blackout. You know. Happened everywhere. Did anybody ever go to bed with ugly women? I never did. I never once went to bed with an ugly woman. A long time ago, I discovered that I could drink somebody good-looking for about $26. You know, about $26 worth of booze would make you good-looking, you know. And I never once went to bed with an ugly woman. But they changed overnight. And in the morning, they weren't the same. Can you relate? You know. I remember once I woke up in this, you know, situation and, oh, man, this witch. I went, oh, get out, you ugly, get out. You get out, this is my house. And threw me out. Wow. Every time. I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, went out for Sunday brunch with the manager of Big Rock and Roll Band. We had both had a gig to do and I come out of the blackout. 2 days later. Now, the reason we got on the Sunday brunch on the bike on a beautiful sunny day was because we had to do something. It was one of the few times when I went out and actually said, I cannot, like, get sarsaparilla. I just got to, like, didn't make any difference. Came out of the blackout 2 days later. My best pal, who'd known me all my life, 40 years at that time, you know, we'd robbed and cheated and lied and screwed our way around the planet a couple of times. My best pal, we'd gone to jail umpteen times. We'd run into banks with guns a million times. We'd stood on the pavement and shot people and never, like, backed off. I picked up the phone. He was in town. When I picked up the phone, he was pissed off. And I said, which I didn't know at the time, but what I always said was, what's the matter with you? I didn't know I always said that. I never once said what was about me. It was always, what's the matter with you? And he said, I know it won't happen again because I won't be in your company when you drink it anymore. I went, what? Screw you. See, that's what I'm saying. When I got here, there was nobody breathlessly waiting for me to show up. My best friends were telling me they weren't going to be in my company when I was drinking anymore. And I felt all that guilt, shame, remorse, anxiety, fear, worry, loneliness. Anybody relate to any of that? No? And I picked up the phone and I spoke to another friend and he was laughing. I went, what are you laughing at? He went, you're a funny monkey, you. I said, why? And he laughed again. I went, what are you laughing at? He said, don't you remember? I said, no, what? He said, well, you had some fun over the weekend. I said, did I? Why? He went, you don't remember, do you? I said, no, what? What happened? He said, well, it all started after you peed in that lady's dinner. I went, what? He said, don't you remember that restaurant where you peed in that lady's dinner? I went, oh, man. How the hell can I wriggle out of this one? I'll have to speak to you later. I never knew I'd peed in no lady's dinner, and yet I did stuff like that and didn't understand why people got pissed off. Because that's what I would do. I would do something like that and not know nothing about it, and the following night go back to that restaurant. And they'd say, how have you got the balls to come in here after what you did? I'd say, what are you talking about? And that was it. I never knew. Oh, man. And the girl I was renting a room in my house to had been busted on a 502. When I came out of that blackout, she'd been sentenced to the, by the courts. There was literature on my table in my coffee. There was a meeting directory. I just had to get out of that room, and I walked to a meeting in West Hollywood called Architects of Adversity. And I could walk down to the road. I just had to get out of that room. And that's what I did. Another part of the process that's described in this book, this beautiful book here, was working. I didn't know that. I had no idea at that time. And I often wonder what would happen today if I ever hear somebody identify, you know, like I identified at that first meeting. I never knew nothing about no procedure, you know, but there was this big, bad facade outside, you know, this big, bad shield that kept you from me, you know. And what happened at that meeting was that Alcoholics Anonymous and the magic that happens here in this process broke through that shield. See, because what was behind that shield was this different person than what I projected to you. See, when they said to me, like, who are you? What's your name? And we do that, don't we? I don't know about down here, but up there, like, you know, who are you? Somebody gets up to read or participate and they forget to say their name. Almost in unison we go, who are you? What are you? As if we have some right to demand this identification. They did that to me at that first meeting. You know what I mean? Who are you? What's your name? I went, screw off! None of your business! It's supposed to be anonymous! Don't ask me my name. And I told you I'm not swearing, so it never came out quite the same as that. But that's what I brought here. And yet deep behind all that was this scared, frightened little boy that just wanted a hug and wanted a cuddle and wanted a love and wanted what you guys did, wrap your arms around me and just like, just guided me in a different area, different path, taught me how to live differently to what I was, because I wasn't that person. In 1966, I got put on a, I came out of a blackout, biting into my arm to see what was real and what wasn't, was it true or not, on a murder charge, and I stood in front of a judge, manipulated that law, and got found not guilty. But at that time in London, England, they hung you. There was a hanging bill there, and if they'd hung me then in 1966, you know, you'd have hung the wrong guy. And I've heard that in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I relate. I wasn't that same guy. Just wasn't the same guy. There's nothing about me then is what I am now. Yeah. And I didn't hear about anything else. You know, I got this Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, and they told me about alcohol. And I didn't hear about anything else. I didn't hear that it was a no-no to do anything else at all. You know, so I never drank. I never drank anymore, and I went to meetings. I loved it. I was about 6 weeks when I thought sober, and my pal, you know, he said to me, Mick, what are you doing? He said, I thought you was going to give this a good shot. I said, I am. It's great. 6 weeks sober. I haven't had a drink in 6 weeks. He said, you're screwed up. I said, leave me alone. I ain't had a drink for 6 weeks. He said, you're screwed up on something. And I had to think, did I drink? No, I never drank. No, I ain't had a drink. I ain't had a drink. What are you having a go at me for? He said, you're screwed up on something. What have you been taking? I said, nothing. I smoked a little indica before I come out. He said, you can't do that. Of course I can. He said, no, you can't. It's everything. I said, no, it ain't. It don't mean pot. I like pot. I ain't got a problem with pot. He said, you dick, keep coming back. I went, don't have a go at me. And I didn't know you. See, I didn't hear that. I didn't know I had a problem with pot for a start. Pot only done two things to me. Made me horny and made me hungry. And that was it. Some mornings I'd wake up with a sore arm and a bed full of pizza crust. But apart from that, but I never had a problem with pot. I love pot. I wish I'd had pot when I was five. I got spiritual on pot. Anybody ever smoke up a doobie and like turn on the TV right at 6 o'clock? Because I would smoke a doobie at five, because come six I would be peeking and like I'd turn on the TV and there would be Kung Fu. Grasshopper. Old Bug Eye, you remember him? Yeah. And they'd lay that rice paper down and I'd go tripping out on that rice paper. I never had a problem with pot. Pot didn't do that to me. All right, alcohol, all right, I understand. I'd be powerless over alcohol, but not pot. I mean, I'd sit and look at my foot for 3 hours. Anybody do that? Anybody study doorknobs? God, man. Whatever. I just described my mind to you. What about I'd smoke a doobie and sit back and whole days would go by and it'd get dark and I'd go, oh, wow, it's 8 o'clock. Just been sitting here expanding my mind. Can you imagine that? I didn't have a problem with pills either. I like pills. I like speed. I like crank. Anybody shoot a little crank on speed? I mean, I ain't what to think today after I'd lost all my teeth running around town, you know, grinding my gums. You know what I mean? I mean, I like speed. I didn't have a problem with speed. I like being up. I could run around town all night and, like, talk to loads of ladies, you know. But I might as well have said to them, do you want to come home? We'll talk about sex. There's no chance of getting any. You know what I mean? I like speed. It made parts of me disappear. What are you laughing at? I mean, I go looking for my dick, and if I found it, I mean, like, if I found it, it had this soft inch in the middle that never quite made it, you know what I mean? You know what I mean, lady? You're an insensitive lot. This is, like, really delicate, you know? I mean, I was far too macho to, like, say, oh, well, you know, sorry, love, like, or anything like that, anything nice. I'd have to get all macho and, like, slap her and throw her out or blame her for, you know, something other than me, you know. Didn't have a problem with heroin. I didn't have a problem with anyone. I didn't mind if I nodded out and little social heroin never hurt anybody. You know, I could puke anywhere. So I didn't know any of that stuff. Just now I found out about that as this process began to work. I didn't have a problem with cocaine. I'd do anything for cocaine except pay for it. It's just true. But when I remember back now, I mean, I never done anything in moderation, did you? I never done anything in moderation except the steps. That's just true. You know, that was it. I never knew none of that. Just never knew none of that. Alcoholics Anonymous taught me that as I stayed here and kept coming back. And so this process started working. You know, and I never knew nothing like that. And somehow got this book, this beautiful book here. Somehow somebody guided me and, like, you know, taught me some of that stuff. And then I learned how to ask. ASK, Ask Saving Kit. You know, I didn't know how to ask. I knew everything, man. I didn't know how to ask for help. How could I... Because I asked for help and I knew everything. You want to know how the space shuttle blew up? I'll tell you, I knew. You know? Couldn't ask, and you guys helped me. You guys just loved me. I never knew nothing about love. I never had a clue about love. I never knew anything about love in any way, shape, or form. Didn't know how to recognize it, didn't know how to feel it or give it or nothing. Nothing about love. And you know what I found out? I found out that sure enough, I was a junkie, all right? I was a love junkie. I'm a love junkie. Any other love junkies here? Yeah, man. I'm a love junkie. I love love and respond to love. And you guys just love me to death. And I never knew how to even take that. I never knew how to, like, receive love. If anybody all my life and everybody I knew, if anybody showed you any love or any kind of, you know, response or nicety, you just took that as weakness, man, and just gobbled them up. That was what it was. And if I had ever given anybody any love or any feelings or let the barrier down a little bit, it seemed that I got my feelings hurt, so I never done it. Never expected nothing and never got nothing. And you guys changed all that. You guys have just done all that. I didn't know anything about that. Thank God that I got in touch with through your help. There's a little thing that I just think about. You know, when I get out of the way and let God run the show, you know, my life works. When I just get out of the way and let God run the show. Because right there, the very word run, R-U-N, is how you spell run, R-U-N. See, and when God's running the show, my life works. Because when I was running it, you know, nothing worked. In fact, I ruined everything. I ruined it. Everything I ever touched it, everything in my entire life, I ruined. R-U-I-N. You know how you spell ruin? R-U-I-N. So if I take the word ruin and remove I, it turns to run. And if I take run and put I in there, it turns to ruin. So for me, it's just a simple process. When I get out of the way and let God run the show, it runs. When I get in there, I ruin it. Fairly easy lesson, right? I never knew how to do that. Never knew how to do that. You guys let me know that. You guys continue to teach me that. You guys just do all that. You know, when I got here and I told you, you know, I was no vision for you. Why I know this stuff works today as well. You see, this is such a progressive disease. This disease is so progressive. Once we grow over that invisible line like this book talks about, this beautiful book here. You know, once we go over that invisible line, the decline is so rapid, so fast, and so devastating. You know, it's immediate like that. Never mind that high bottom and low bottom, which I don't believe in. I don't go for that high bottom and low bottom stuff. I don't believe that. I'm firmly convinced that everybody's bottom is exactly the same. And I don't know about you. And I try not to give opinions up here. You know, I don't know, for example, in Alcoholics Anonymous, why people get to these podiums and, for me, devalue what they say by saying, everything you hear from me is strictly my own opinion. I feel like saying, shove it up your tush, give me your experience, shove your opinion. Don't talk about opinions in that book. See, so I try not to give opinions. But my experience is that our bottom is that moment in our life where, at some point in my life, where, and I heard about it, and it was for me way, way, way back, where that voice, anybody relate to that voice, by the way, that voice that talks to you? That voice that just said, what voice? That voice. You know, but there was a voice that said, you know, oh, wow. Perhaps you shouldn't do that. You better watch that. You better not do that again. Or like, hey, you better do something about that. Right there is my bottom. Right there is my bottom. But unfortunately, I never did anything at that stage of it, like this beautiful book talks about. Some of us could have, like, saved all that for years and years, but we never take any notice of it up there. We don't consider it's a bottom until down there something happens. Till we're laying in the gutter, or we're diseased, or bleeding out of every orifice we got. You know, we could have done something up there, but we didn't. We didn't do nothing until somewhere down here. But that's not my bottom. My bottom occurred way up here. I just never done anything about it until I got way down there. You see? And that wasn't my bottom. My bottom was way up there. Every bit of trouble I've ever been in my entire life is a direct result of alcohol and drugs. Everything. And I never knew that either. When I was 21 years of age and got a prison sentence of a year and a half, they put me on, you know, the old psychoanalysts. I've been on all kinds of this. I've been in, like, padded cells, lockdowns. Like, all my life, people have told me, you're nuts, you are. You're mad, you are. You're mental, you. I don't know, a pal of mine, maybe some of you are too old and some of you are too young and some of you may remember, but there was a band called The Who, and Keith Moon was the drummer for that band. And Keith was a friend of mine. He had a certain reputation. And one day, Keith turned around to me and he said, you're mad, you are. You're nuts, you. You're mental. You ought to be locked up, you. And when someone like Mooney thinks you're nuts, it ought to tell you something, you know. But it don't with us, you know. And I never knew. And when I was 21, they all that psycho stuff, and eventually they said, you've got a booze problem. I said, right, screw you. I'm quitting all this stuff because I ain't got no booze problem. You ain't locking me over in the nutter's ward. I want to go in the main body. Because that's where you went if you was booze or drugs. I said, I'm a thief, man, and I'm a good thief, and I want to be a thief, and I'm proud of being a thief. He said, yeah, what you doing in here then? I said, a year and a half. He said, yeah, what did you get it for? I said, robbery. Armed robbery with violence. He said, yeah, what did you rob? And I said, oh, that's just coincidence. See, I got a year and a half in jail for hijacking a truckload of booze. Every bit of trouble my entire life has been a direct result of alcohol and booze. So in here is where I learned the lessons, and, you know, in here is where it's at. You know, my life has changed, and for me, in retrospect, I can look back and say it's got better. I don't stand here today and say it will get better. I believe that if I say that, I'm not accepting it for what it is today. Oh, invariably, it does get better, and I'm grateful for that. You know, but I don't stand here today and expect it to get better, because I know today that if I say things like that, all I'm really doing is, like, subconsciously not accepting it for what it is today. Oh, it might change, and it'll change to whatever it is. You know, my life has changed as well, and it's not always fair. You know, but no one ever told me it would be fair, did they, you? Nobody ever told me my life would be fair and it would be fair. No one ever said that. If you want fair, go to bloody Pomona. There's a big fair there. You know? No one said it would be fair. But it's changed and it's got better and better and better and better. And I know that alcoholism... So one thing, a little pet peeve, not exactly a problem, just a little pet peeve with the disease being called alcoholism, and that is because it contains the word alcohol. Now, I don't have a problem with that. I'm an alcoholic. I'm a blackout drinker. And I have no desire to drink and use today. I have other things. And the ism part of alcoholism takes a big effect on me. Ism, ISM. One of the things that stands for me is incredibly short memory. I got this incredibly short memory when it comes to alcohol and drugs. I forget. I just forget what I'm doing here. And what brought me here. And the other part of ism is I sabotage myself. And I will. I sabotage even sober. I sabotage myself with dysfunctional behaviour and compulsiveness. My friend, we talk about it. She's 8 years sober too. I sabotage myself. Stone cold sober. Anybody relate to that? I mean, she talks about it. She says, like, she'll spend money she ain't got. She'll go on shopping sprees with a card. Anybody do that? Eat, we'll eat ourselves silly. I got love handles, no one's grabbing, but I still eat. You know what I mean? Oh, I'll eat. Sex? Oh, yeah, I'll screw my brains out. In fact, she says, bend me over a counter of iMagnums with a bag full of Oreos while you're screwing my brains out, and I'm a happy camper. You know? I mean, that's just the way I am. Stone cold sober, what are you laughing at? But how do I not do that? By taking what's in this book. I never knew that. Never knew nothing like that. Never knew I had a problem in that area. Never knew the second half of the first step applied to me. All right, I'm powerless over alcohol. Never knew that. Second half of the first step, life was unmanageable. That didn't apply to me. In my misconceived head, that did not apply to me. My misconceptions when I got here were, had no relativity to the truth. None whatsoever. Me and the truth were like this. All right, second half of the first step, want of a better description. My life was unmanageable. Didn't apply to me. At worst, I was just going through a rough patch. I'll be all right when I get over the hump. But I told you, on every level, my misconceptions was like so distant from the truth, there was no relativity to the truth. Did anybody, when they got to out there, now this is my misconceived head, when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I physically changed. I actually physically changed. Did anybody else? See, I physically changed. For a start, I gained 15 years. In my head, when I got here, I was 25. I was actually 40. I thought I was 25. I wasn't. I was 40 years of age. Misconceived, misconceptions. I thought that I was 220 pounds of rippling muscle with a 12-inch dick. I had to keep coming back, and the process eventually started working, and this beautiful book here, like, put me in touch with the truth. And it wasn't long before you guys let me know that in actual fact I was nowhere near 220 pounds. That second step, you know, that insanity. The insanity of repeating the same behavior and expecting a different result, man. I never do nothing like that. I thought insane was swimming in a river in Paris. I didn't know. See, being insane, I thought was all that crazy behavior that we pulled. That wasn't what you took, guys. That was alcoholic addicted behavior. That wasn't insanity like we describe here. No. That insanity was repeating the same behavior, and yet stone cold sober, we hear about it, don't we? We hear about those slippy poos. We hear about little slippy poos, don't we? Sometimes I hear so much about slipping, I think it's one of the steps. It ain't. There's no such thing as the slip step. Right there. Right there between 3 and 4. Uh-uh, it ain't there. No. It ain't true. It ain't true. See, stone cold sober, I'm capable of insane thoughts followed by insane actions. You know, don't clap on your own, someone will throw you a fish. Sorry. That insane thought, for me to think about drinking and using again is an insane thought. Followed by the insane action of actually doing it is insanity personified. And yet, stone cold sober, we have insane thoughts followed by insane actions. Stone cold sober. Now, this book describes differently. This book, this beautiful book here, why I know. See, there's a set of stuff that they say, a book is meant to be suggestive only. A book is meant to be suggestive only. But I know what they really meant when they said that. I know why they wrote that. I know why what they're really saying when they say that. See? See, our book is meant to be suggestive only. But what it's really saying is, if you don't do it, you'll die, Father Mucker. See, that's what... But they couldn't write that. I mean, they couldn't write that in there, could they? I mean, they couldn't write that, because I'm a delicate dude, man. I'm a delicate dude with all these feelings. You can't tell me what to do, because even if you're right, I don't want to hear it. So they suggest it. Suggest it only. See? Our book is meant to be suggestive only. But I know what they really mean. My pal out in the valley, he's got this aeroplane, and he takes people skydiving and parachute jumping and stuff. And when you're in that plane, and you leap out, you know, there's a dispatch hatch like that, and several thousand feet up, you know, just before you leap out like that, there's a notice just above the dispatch hatch, and it says, "It is suggested that you attach the parachute to the ripcord." Nobody has ever said, "Oh, screw that, it's only a suggestion, I'm out of here without the parachute." Because what it's really saying is, you're going to die, Father Mucker. See? So although they're only suggestions, I don't look for loopholes, I don't always know how to work it, but you know, that's what it is. That's exactly what it is. Golly, I'm just like, whew, you could send out for breakfast if I get on a roll, but I guess we're here. And I'm happy to be here. I'm real glad. You know, sober to me is S-O-B-E-R, and that stands for son of a bitch, everything's real. And that's what it is, man. That's what it is. That's what it is. That's exactly what it is. You know. And I tell you that it's worth it, and it's worth sticking around it. There is nothing to learn. I don't care if this is controversial. There's nothing to learn by going out there and drinking and using that you can't learn by staying in here. Nothing at all. When it says in that book, oh yeah, step up to the first bar and try some controlled drinking like we so venomously tell people, they don't tell them to follow the bit up, you know, and then abruptly try to stop. We get the lesson from trying to stop, not from the drinking. You know, I don't believe in telling people to drink. There's nothing out there to learn that you can't learn by staying in. Stay in here and learn the lessons. This is where it's at. This is the sober life, that sober living that's worth it. It's just worth it. I believe that. And I believe you're worth it too. And I believe that you are the most important person occupying your space. And I am too. I'm the best Mickey Bush I have ever been in my entire life. I have never ever been a better Mickey Bush than I am today, ever. In fact, I'm the best Bush in town. I I'm glad you're here, Paul. Thanks for being here. Thank you for inviting me, and keep laughing. Thank you.